thank you for joining me this evening on Coast to Coast AM. I wish all of you and yours a very happy and safe Easter holiday weekend. Thank you for joining me this evening. We are talking with author Joey Albrecht and supernatural encounter survivor Debbie Moffitt about one of the truly most weird and terrifying paranormal cases I've ever had the chance to hear. Joey Albrecht is the author. Joey, when you're listening to this story and it's unfolding, this energy, this supernatural phenomena is not contained to one property, not contained to two properties, but now is taking a third. And it's powerful enough to start changing and altering people's personalities and begin apporting things from one property to another, making it disappear in one location, reappear in another within seconds of it being replaced. You're hearing this story from Debbie, and she's relating this to you. How do you wrap your head around this kind of activity and the fact that it's slowly building and growing to unimaginable energetic proportions?
Well, at this point in her telling me the story, you know, I was sort of sharing her amazement at it rather than terror, because nothing really terrifying was happening yet. You know, certainly unsettling, but not terrifying at that point. And I think the demon was sort of lulling them into a false sense of security that, you know, it wasn't going to be harmful. It was just a nuisance. So that, you know, when it did become more harmful, it did come as a surprise.
Well, maybe Hollywood has jaded you, but when things start moving from one house to another, and when people's personalities begin to change, to me, that's a little bit on the terrifying side. That's not something you can go throw a bum out that was camping out in your house that didn't belong there, that wasn't, you know, a raccoon that's getting into your chimney. This is some kind of creepy energy moving stuff around through three properties, playing the shell game with you. I guess we have different perspectives on what is going on. They've just mentioned it. They haven't hit the terrifying points yet, folks. This story is huge. We're unfolding it this evening. The book just came out this past week. It's available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. Check out their website, adeadlyhaunting.com. That's adeadlyhaunting.com for more information about our guests, to see some of the photographs from inside the book and evidence of this supernatural encounter. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more A Deadly Haunting on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM tonight, the telling of A Deadly Haunting. Our guests, author Joey Albrecht and supernatural survivor Debbie Moffitt, here to share their story. Joey mentioned to us here, Debbie, that at this point it's not really that frightening. It's more amazing to you. It's more almost entertaining. This thing seems to be lulling you in with these tricks, these low-level tricks, almost begging you to pay attention to it.
Yeah, that was true. And it was every time I came down to the house, it would perform. I'd come down and I could say, this is after the gentleman moved out. He just, right. One weekend, he just packed and left.
Now, this is property number three. This is the far-out property from your home.
Right, this is the
number three house. Okay.
And it would be, you could come in and you could say, whatever is here, move something for me. Now, it never would do it right in front of your eyes so you could see it happen. You'd have to go in. I'd go into the kitchen, count to 10, and come back, and something would be moved, like a big lamp would be put in the middle of the floor, or a chair would be moved, or furniture would be piled. So it did. It was like it was there listening, and it wanted the attention, and it was absolute, to me, it wasn't frightening. It was like amazing at that point.
I have to ask, Joey, when you're hearing a story like this, is there ever any question to you of the sanity of Debbie Moffitt, that maybe this is just a really huge hallucination, that she's going through these things and seeing or making up this story within her own mind?
Well, that's certainly always a possibility, but in this case, I knew that the things she was saying were possible, and when I saw the photographs that they had, which were all date and time-stamped from that era and included people that are no longer with us, that completely, you know, convinced me that this is absolutely true.
All right, let's go back into the story to continue fleshing this out. You've got all this activity. You're now able to go in and almost command this thing to act out, and it does what you ask it to do. But it's not giving you any sense that it's dark or demonic. You're not feeling scared or frightened by what's going on. You're more amazed by all of it. And, I mean, there was no hint at that point that there was maybe something darker to what was going on?
At that point, no. It was just almost like you said, performing tricks. Then it started happening in my mother-in-law's house where we were living. Little things started to happen. Photographs. It loved to turn things backwards. The photographs would be turned backwards. Things would be moved. So then things stopped happening in the third house, and start happening in the middle house. So during this time, when everything kind of stopped in that house, my husband said, well, let's just rent it out again. Because we didn't feel at that time it was anything threatening, and it actually wasn't doing anything in that house at the time. So we rented it out. We rented it out to a gentleman and his girlfriend. He was a little bit older, and she was like 10 years younger than him. And they moved in. He was kind of quiet. She was a nice lady. She would talk to me. Once in a while, we'd meet out in the front yard, and we'd talk. And she seemed very nice. Then I met her one time out in front. They'd been living there for over a month at that time. Little things had still been happening in the middle house at the time, but nothing bad, nothing scary, but it did scare my mother-in-law and it did scare my husband. Well, I talked to the lady and she came out and she was kind of upset. And I asked, you know, what was wrong? Her name was Michelle. And she said, well, things had changed between her and her boyfriend that were living there. And his personality had changed. She said he was acting kind of strange. Then within a week, I saw her out in front and she looked like she had she was kind of hiding from me. And she had looked like she had gotten beaten up. And I told her, you know, you should just, you know, get away from him. Don't stay, just leave. And that was the last time I ever saw her.
Now, did you have a concern at this point that it was maybe something in the house influencing him? Or
no.
Are you thinking it's just a relationship that's starting to go south?
Yeah, that's what I thought, because I didn't think they didn't mention anything happening. Everything seemed quiet at that house. Little things were going on in our house, but nothing major. It was kind of quiet. It wasn't bad. It wasn't scary to me. But like I said, that was the last time I ever saw her. And then like 2 weeks later, I saw him out in front and I asked him, you know, where's Michelle? I haven't seen her. And he said, you know, he kind of got a little huffy. He said, like, it's not your business, but she left me. And I said, well, okay. I'm sorry about that. She was a nice lady. And he went in and that was the last I heard from him. And like two weeks later after that, he moved out. He just moved out. Didn't say he was going. It was just, gone.
Breaking the lease, just getting out of the house.
He didn't even get his security deposit. He just left. And I went in, because when someone leaves, you have to do the cleanup.
This was nothing like the personality of the man that you originally rented the house to.
No, he was very quiet. He was a quiet gentleman to begin with, but now this was kind of like a hostile, you know, it's like you get somebody who's hostile that, you know, they'd even look at you like they're mad. But that was the last time I saw him. He left. We went into the house to check what had to be cleaned, what had to be fixed. And the house was spotless. It was just, I was happy as could be because I didn't have to do anything, but it was just spotless. He cleaned everything.
It smelled like bleach, right?
Yeah, and it smelled like bleach, but I didn't even think of anything. It smelled clean. That was good for me.
So at this point, you know that she was out the one night looking, though she had been beat up. You've given her the advice, you should probably just get away from this guy. Suddenly, she's no longer around. She's just left him. He picks up and leaves without any word. You go down there. The house smells, it is immaculate, and it smells like bleach. Is there anything else out of the ordinary at the house? Anything missing? Anything that...
Yeah, there was a, which I didn't know at the time, because I didn't even think of it. But how I knew this was missing, my husband brought it up. A few weeks later after this happened, well, it was actually a couple months, a month and a half later. I was out in the front yard and somebody was knocking at the door. We hadn't re-rented the house. We were just going to leave it empty because we had planned for the last 6 months to move. Not because at that time of the entity, but we were planning on moving to a larger house. and he was knocking at the door, and I yelled over, he's gone, you know, and there's nobody living there now. And he said, well, do you know where he went? I said, I have no idea. And then he kind of turned and was going to leave, and then he turned around and looked at me and said, you know what happened to Michelle, don't you? And I said, no, I don't. I she left. I have no idea. He said they found her body in a landfill wrapped in a rug. So.
And the rug was missing from your.
And I went home and told my husband, and he said, you know, a rug was missing from the one room. So whether it was the rug, I don't know. Whether he had anything to do with it, I don't know.
You now.
Very strange that the house was cleaned like that. She was missing. The rug was missing. And it was just, it's kind of scary.
Did you feel that you should alert the media, or not the media, but the police or the law enforcement officials at that time about the possibility that maybe your third property was a murder scene?
When we went in, it was spotless. There was nothing there. Everything had been cleaned, and it had been months since before we even found out about this. Actually, I was just told this by the gentleman. I didn't go research it. I didn't look. I just told my husband about it. He said, well, we can't prove anything. We can't. We don't even know where he went or anything. So we just didn't say anything.
How does that affect you? I mean, it's one thing to think, okay, we've got some weird paranormal activity here. But you're kind of disassociating at this point, it seems like. You're not really feeling that maybe he's reacting this way because of the spirits. You just think this just may be a volatile, unstable man, which we meet those people all the time. They can be gregarious and happy one minute and dark and really edgy the next. But now you realize there's a real possibility somebody died now in that third house. One of our tenants may have been murdered. Does that start to play upon you and your fears?
And I told that to my husband, and he said, you know what? We don't know what really happened here. We don't know if she really was found in the landfill, because he didn't want me to look it up, or he didn't want to. He said, just we can't prove anything. So what are we going to do? Tell someone something happened and we can't prove it? So we just stayed out of it.
Now you've got, Joey, a story of not only paranormal activity and things apporting and things being moved upon command, but the real possibility that a murder occurred and that this energy may be influencing people to do horrible things. Does this, because again, reading the book, and this is when I start looking over the top of my book and start making sure everything's where it needs to be and nothing's coming up the stairs at me. I mean, how does this affect you as a writer and somebody who's involved in the entertainment field? I'm sure you're a very visual person. How do you, again, at this point, being sensitive to keep yourself in check from hearing this kind of story and not have it start to wig you out?
I don't know how to describe it, but it was like stepping back from it. It was almost like being an observer as I was writing it. So when I finished the book, I didn't even know if it was going to be scary, because I had kept myself in such a place of not being scared that, you know, I had to rely on feedback to go, yeah, it's scary, you know.
All right, you've got this going on. You're explaining the story to Joey, sharing this with her. She's keeping kind of a distance from this. Was it weird at all for you to be relating the story and having these kind of things unfold to you and have these memories reoccurring because it's been so long, and have somebody who's just kind of taking it in stride and not freaked out by that? Was that a little bizarre as well for you?
Yeah, it was, Debbie? Because I think I expected more of a reaction, but Joey just listened. And I knew just by talking to her that Joey believed me. So I was able to tell her things that maybe I wouldn't tell other people.
Was that a relief to be able to feel that you could finally open up and not be judged or looked at like you were insane?
Yes, it was. I'd hidden this. That was one of the reasons I really wanted to get this out. I had hidden this for so long. And I had so many questions because nothing was ever answered. Anything was ever answered for me. So it was like, this has always been in the back of my head. Maybe if I get this out there, maybe somebody will come to me and say, hey, you know what this was? You know why it did this, this, and this? Some answers, maybe. So it was very cathartic for me to talk to her.
All right. You've now got this tenant in the third house has picked up. You guys have decided to just kind of close this house down. We're not renting it anymore.
Right. In the first house, the grandmother's house, the gentleman died.
Right. Okay, and so in the middle house here, this is where the gentleman was living, and he had had some weird little things, but nothing major had gone on.
It seemed like his son was more affected than he was, if it was affecting the son with the strange behavior. When the father died, the mother had to come collect the son because he wasn't, at this point, he wasn't quite mentally right. So she had to come get him.
So when the son moved in there, perfectly normal, fine, regular guy, as this thing unfolds, he starts to get loonier and more bizarre. How about the health of your renter? Was he in ill health that you knew of? Or
I really didn't know. I think he had a heart condition. I'm not sure, but that's what he died of, congestive heart failure. So.
All right. So there wasn't a concern at that point that maybe a second victim had been taken out by whatever this energy was.
No, we thought it was just natural death.
All right. And now the second property, the middle house where the grandmother had originally died and the ball of light chased the Santeria practitioner out of the house, this house is now empty.
Right.
So your two out of three houses are now clear.
Right. And we found a house that we liked in El Toloma, part of the upper part of Ranch Cucamonga.
Now, how long is this period of time now from when you moved in there to this point? How many years, weeks, months have passed?
About a year.
Okay. That's a lot of activity in 1 year.
Yeah.
And well, are you still going down to old house number three on occasion just to see if
the ghost will move stuff? No, we locked it up after that last thing about Michelle. Even if we didn't know if it was true or not, we locked the house up and that was it. My husband had cleared out all his stuff after the first tenant moved out, so we didn't have to go back there, and that was it. We never went back there again.
And I'd like to point out that during the last 9 months of this year that she's talking about, she was pregnant, because it's at this point that she gives birth to her first child.
Wow. So you're pregnant during all of this.
Yes.
Is there any concern on your part for your safety or the baby's safety with what's going on?
For my safety, no. And for my child's, no. I was not frightened of this. My husband, very frightened of this. But he also had a heart condition, so it made, it was two things going on in his life. My mother-in-law, she was a very religious person, and she was petrified of this. My father-in-law was rather indifferent to it.
Father-in-law.
So we found the new house. It was larger. Things were focusing on the middle house that we were living in.
Okay.
Still nothing really bad, but it was scary to my mother-in-law, especially because things moving, she'd put something somewhere, she'd look and it would be in front of her on the floor. It'd be just, and so she was happy to move, but we weren't moving at that point. Well, I wasn't, because we had planned before to move to a bigger house, but I think we stepped up the process of moving to get away from this, because we thought we could get away from it. And we put the three houses and the land all there. It's on the corner of Archibald Avenue in Ranch Cucamonga for sale. And we moved to our new house.
Now, do you have any feeling? Do you mention what's going on in this house, or do you just want to get rid of it, be clear of it, and it's on the shoulders of whoever gets this house next?
Well, what happened is when we moved, at first, like for 2 weeks, when we first moved to the new house, everything was quiet. We thought, oh, good. We got away from it. Then things started to happen. So by the time we sold the properties down on Archibald, the entity wasn't there anymore. It was with us. So there was nothing down there then.
So you were comfortable in the fact that the houses now were safe. Those three properties were no longer in jeopardy of something negative going on there.
Right. It was quiet down there. But the strange thing is the people that bought the properties tore the three houses down. They didn't re-rent them or anything. They tore them down. And to this day, 25 years later, now this is a prime piece of property right on Archibald Avenue in Arrow. Nothing has ever been built there.
Did they ever give a reason? Did you ever ask why?
No. They're just empty.
A Deadly Haunting. That's the name of the book. We're talking with the author, Joey Albrecht, this evening, and real-life experiencer, Debbie Moffitt, sharing this uncanny and frightening story. We've only scratched the surface. We've got a lot more story to tell. Stay tuned. More Coast to Coast comes right after this. Have you survived an extreme haunting, a malevolent spirit? We're going to open up phone lines in hour four. I'd love to hear your stories. And if you have questions for our guests, that'll be your opportunity to call in and be a part of Coast to Coast AM this evening. We're talking about a deadly haunting. That's the name of the book. Just came out, The Night of the Blood Moon, folks. The book is out and available through Amazon.com. Go check out at deadlyhaunting.com. Author Joey Albrecht is with us this evening, real-life survivor. Debbie Moffitt here. Debbie, I need to ask before we take our next break. You sold that property, the three houses. How quickly after the new owners took ownership did that property get torn down?
Probably a few months. They never rented them. They raised everything.
Just brought it, raised it, and that was the end of it. And this is prime property. Again, it's not right. Like you, this wasn't the ghetto. This wasn't an area that they just wanted to bury. This is a very prime piece of real estate still.
Yes.
Have you been back to that property since?
I go by it all the time.
Have you ever stopped and walked the property?
No.
Do you have any interest in doing that, or is that something you feel that is best left alone?
I don't think there's anything there right now. I think it's just an empty lot. Just sometimes it brings back a lot of memories back there. One thing I'd like to regress a little bit on, before we moved up to the new house, while we were in the process of moving, down at the old house, my mother-in-law and I were finishing up packing things. We were in the middle house, to her house, and we were in her bedroom, just her and I. Everybody else was gone. And we were in her bedroom packing the last bit of clothing. And all of a sudden, this is when the entity started to show how violent it could be. We heard an explosion in the kitchen. We both ran into the kitchen, and the cupboards that were on the walls were all ripped off. The doors, everything was just like someone took their hand and just pulled them and ripped them out of the walls.
So this was not happy that you were moving.
No, it was upset. While we were in the kitchen looking at this, we heard another explosion where we had just were in the bedroom, and it had blown out all the windows in the bedroom. So my mother-in-law, I grabbed the box. My mother-in-law, I left. She never went back inside that house again. That was it.
Very strange. I mean, this is dramatic. This is unbelievable, this kind of activity. It amped up over the short period of time. That's why it's called a deadly haunting. Stay tuned. We'll get more into the story on Coast to Coast AM right after this. Good evening. Welcome back to Coast AM. Tonight we're talking about a deadly haunting. Strange reactions from the audience. I've got to tell you, I'm getting emails, Facebook comments, private messages, tweets. Absolutely freaked out by this story and the fact that we would air this the night before Easter. How could we share such a dark, malevolent story? How could we think about this when we're celebrating Easter tomorrow? Well, again, this is just the beginning of the story, folks. There is resolution. There is an end game to this. And a lot of what we talk about on these shows is to educate, enlighten, and entertain you, to bring what's in the darkness out, tell you the story, and help you understand what you're dealing with. There are listeners around the world that have experienced their own encounters. Tonight, we're hearing about a deadly haunting written by Joey Albrecht, as told to her by the real-life survivor Debbie Moffitt, both ladies joining us this evening on the show and sharing their encounters. Debbie, you've got an amazing story. You've got so much activity going on. You're trying to leave the one property. You leave the room, come back. Cabinets are torn off their hinges. The explosion of glass. You go out, all the windows in one room blown out. You now know you just got to get the hell out of this house. You're leaving. Is there a sense of relief thinking, all right, we're done with this. We're out. This thing can stay on this property, and we'll never have to deal with this again.
Yes, there was. It was like, especially for my mother-in-law and my husband, it was like they felt like they were escaping. They felt we were reaching a new, our house was like our home now. We weren't going to be bothered at all. And that, it just wasn't true.
Now,
within 2 to 3 weeks, things started happening in the new house.
And how do they start to amp up? I mean, you go from, pretty innocuous little things of turning picture frames around, bobblehead figures, figurines, just moving things from room to room or from home to home, property to property, to exploding windows, wood doors torn off their hinges. How does it start to give its sense of presence in the new home?
It started back being just small little things happening. It was like the first thing that happened was my mother-in-law's sister's picture was turned backwards. So it started the same way, things being turned backwards. But then something happened that hadn't happened before, and that was there started to be writing on the mirror upstairs. My mother-in-law and father-in-law had the upstairs bedroom and a bathroom right off it, and there started to be writing with soap on the mirror upstairs. It started off almost like a friendly spirit saying, now be careful, there's danger in the attic room. Don't go in the attic. Don't go in there. It was like warning not to go in the attic. And the entity would never write in front of you. You couldn't look at the mirror and see the writing being done. You'd have to leave and come back, and it would be there.
Much like the movement or apportation of the other devices or the other items in the previous property, it would only reveal itself or do these things when you were gone. Could you be out of the room? Could you hear the sound of the soap squeaking on the mirror or something to alert you that there was activity going on in that room when you weren't there?
No, you couldn't. There wasn't a sound.
It's writing on the mirror.
Right.
It's leaving you messages. But at first, it's coming off as something good. Now, is there any thought in your head? I mean, your mother-in-law is very religious. Do you think that there was something good there trying to protect you and watch out for you, or was it just another trick?
I think that was a trick. That was Mr. Entity. Later on, good things did come to the house to help us. But at that time, that was Mr. Entity. It didn't want us to go into the attic. Our house is was a two-story house. When you went up the staircase, there was a door to the right, and if you went in that door, it went into the attic way. He did not want us going in there. So he was like giving little warnings to my mother-in-law. Don't go in there. It's not safe. Don't go in there. She thought it was her sister talking to her, telling her not to go in the attic for some reason. So at first she didn't think it was Mr. Entity. She thought it was her sister warning her.
And it really wanted to communicate. One of the things that it wrote most often was talk to me.
Talk to me. Talk to me.
So it wanted your energy. It wanted, and would you refer to it? Were you referring to it as the grandmother or as the sister? Were you calling it by name, thinking it was something else?
Not I didn't speak to it when it was upstairs. I came and observed because my mother-in-law would speak to it thinking it was her sister. But then I remember we discussed it among us, and I said, oh, I think this is what was bothering us before. I don't think it's your sister. And then it put on the mirror that we were fools. Fools, it said. And it said, talk to me, talk to me. And it wanted us to get a Ouija board. It said, talk to me on board. And I knew it knew about the board because the gentleman in the greenhouse, the other house, had talked to it on a Ouija board. And we said, no. And it got very upset and said we were fools and we were stupid. And there was no escape.
Now it's starting to amp up and get irritable.
Right. Now it's showing its true colors.
What's the sense in the house? You've got now, is the baby still on the way or is the baby here?
No, Jamie was born.
Are you doing anything to protect the baby?
Jamie never left anyone's sight. Jamie was always with someone. I never, like at nighttime, like when we would watch TV together, you'd put the child to bed. We would not do that. We would have a bed with us. The children were never left alone at any time.
But, Debbie, you also made an arrangement with this entity.
Well, this is a little bit later on because my mother-in-law felt that she was being punished for some reason. She was very religious, and she thought she was being punished. And she wouldn't let us talk because by this time we said, we've got to get help. We've got to go to somebody that knows what this is going on, and we got to get rid of this. She wouldn't let us at that time. She said, no, I don't want anyone to know what's going on. I'm being punished for something. I'm going to keep praying and maybe God will help me.
Yeah, it's absolutely bizarre what's going on in here.
Called the entity Mr. Entity, in hopes of treating it with some kind of respect that it would not harm her or her children, and it agreed not to harm her or her children.
This is when it moved downstairs. My mother-in-law, for a long time, when they lived upstairs, she became too frightened. So we had to, many things that happened in between her moving down here. The entity started to focus its hatred on her. It made her life a living hell. It took away her identity. It took away her license, her credit card, her money. It would destroy everything. Her clothes. She'd go to put on clothes in the closet, and it either had cut them up or had thrown bleach on them. So we had to get her new clothes all the time. It would hide one of each of her shoes, so she only had one shoe of each kind. It just harassed her constantly. It got to the point where, to feel safe, we all moved into the master bedroom downstairs. So all of us were living in the master bedroom right now. And because no one was upstairs with Mr. Entity, he moved down to the downstairs bathroom and started doing all his writing on the downstairs bathroom.
Five of you, just so people understand this, your mother-in-law, father-in-law, your husband, yourself, and your newborn baby are all sharing one bedroom because
right.
This thing is taking over. The immediate question everybody always wants to ask is, if you think it's this bad and it's in this house, why the hell don't you get out of this house and try to leave it behind again?
Because we already moved once. It had moved from house to house, and wherever we went, it went. If we left the house, this is how we became so isolated. If we left the house, say we went out to dinner, the entity would like take the name tags from the waitress, and it would be waiting for us on the table when we got home. It would take pizza cutters and put them on the table when we got home to show that it had been with us where we were. So we
wait a minute. Go back with that. So you would be out for dinner for a night. You'd be at Pizza Hut,
right.
And you'd be talking to your waitress, Wendy, and you would come home, and sitting in your home on the table waiting for you was Wendy's name tag.
Wendy's name tag and two of the pizza cutters that we had used at the restaurant.
Unbelievable. Hard to wrap your mind around that there's this strong of an energy that it's able to move these things. And at this place, now it's starting to play with you like a cat and a mouse.
Right.
It's toying with, it's letting you know. There is no place
right.
You can
no
go.
Escape. That's what he kept telling us. There's no escape. And it got to the point like we couldn't even visit friends. Like we went to visit my mother-in-law's very good friend and her husband. When we came home, on the table was his wallet. Now, we had just visited that gentleman and his wife. How could we take his wallet back and say, here's your wallet? It put us in very strange positions where it showed us that, you know, you're not going to be able to go with people because I'm going to make it your life an embarrassment. And so we couldn't take the wallet back to him and say, look, here's your wallet, because we were just with him. He was going to think that we had taken it. So we ended up mailing it back to him anonymously.
So now you're starting to, it's segregating you. It's trying to separate you from friends and other relatives.
Right.
And creating this weird paranoia. What is it like when other people come to the house? Are they witnessing these experiences?
My mother-in-law wouldn't let anyone come to the house. The one time that someone did come to the house, they came unannounced, and we did let them in, and this was the same gentleman where his wallet was missing, the same couple. They came to, now he walked with a cane. He was a veteran, and he came and they sat down in the family room, and all of a sudden his cane was gone, and he couldn't find it, and we all knew that Mr. Entity had taken the cane. He thought for some reason that his wife had taken the cane and hit it on him, and they ended up getting into a violent argument. So I finally had to run into the bathroom and tell Mr. Entity, bring his cane back. And the entity put his cane on the front door handle. So when they went to leave, there it was on the front door handle.
How did they respond? Did you say, oh, hey, by the way, maybe one of you guys accidentally hung it on the door handle, or do you now tell your friends?
No,
there's something here.
My mother-in-law would not let us tell anyone. We could not. That's what made it hard. When something like this happens, you should talk to people. You know, you have to let people know what's going on. You have to have some type of support group. And we were denied that.
Why do you believe your mother-in-law was so, I mean, she was religious.
Mm-hmm.
She was firmly rooted in religion. And Why do you believe she wasn't being protected?
I can tell you what I learned from the entity.
Please.
This got to the point where I realized it wasn't going away. I mean, it was going to be there. So I went into the bathroom and I said, I started calling it Mr. Entity at this point. I'm going to show you respect and you're going to show me respect. And you're not going to touch my child. You're not going to touch my husband. And you're not going to touch my mother-in-law. I didn't include my father-in-law because he was like indifferent to everything. And the entity, I left and the entity wrote on the mirror when I went back in, I will not touch your child. I will not touch your husband. But Lee belongs to me.
Your mother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
So it made its designs known.
Right.
This woman was its focus.
Yes.
Joey, researching the paranormal and trying to get a handle on this and hearing the story, are there many cases where it just focuses only on one person in the house instead of affecting everybody?
I think that's pretty unusual, but, you know, either an entity is stuck to a place, which is the more usual occurrence, or there is a connection to a person or persons. And in this case, there was a connection to the family.
But can you explain that a little bit more to us?
Well, at one point, you know, as Debbie said, she was trying to get to the bottom of, like, who are you, why are you here, and what's going on? And the entity actually showed her pictures in her mind and wrote, you know, all of this on the mirror about a past life where the entity was actually a monk but secretly a devil worshiper. And whenever they asked him what his name was, he would always tell them Prince. Well, when this supposed past life happened in the 1600s in France, you know, at that point in time, Prince Ball was supposed to be one of the seven princes of Satan himself. And he actually did write Ball on the mirror as well. So, you know, he came up with this past life and told Debbie that, you know, Lee was supposed to be sacrificed to Satan in one of these rituals and was interrupted, and they were all found out and apprehended. So Lee, in that lifetime, never died. The sacrifice was never completed. And so his journey or intent was to finish that sacrifice and make sure that Lee died.
Do you believe, Debbie, that this housekeeper that tried to do the Santeria, do you believe that she opened this wound and allowed this past life demonic creature forward? Or do you think that this was always around your mother-in-law and it was just waiting for its time?
I believe that she opened the door and let it through. I think if that didn't happen, that this in this lifetime, it wouldn't have happened.
You're getting these messages. I mean, that's a big story. Would it write on the mirror? You'd have to go in and clean it off and then it would continue?
It loved to communicate. This wasn't an entity that would swear and do vulgar things on the mirror. This was an entity that would carry on conversations. But he always made you know that he was in charge. You know, he was the boss, even though you'd show him respect, he'd show you respect. But he was going to do what he was going to do. But he would constantly like to communicate. And you're going to ask, well, how do we know one of us in the house wasn't writing on the mirror? And what we would do,
wait a minute, now you're psychic. She's getting in my head.
we'd wait outside the bathroom door. We'd ask a question. The four of us would be right together. We'd wait a few minutes. We'd go in, and he would answer the question. Now, we were all together. Because, you know, the first thing you think of, oh, Bill must be doing this, or Ma's doing this, or I'm doing this, they would think. But so, you know, you always have your doubts. This is so amazing. This can't be happening. But it was. We'd be right together, and we'd go in together. No one had been in the bathroom, and there was the writing.
Well, you're hearing it here, folks. A deadly haunting. Joey Albrecht, real-life experiencer Debbie Moffitt, and more of the story right after this.